Welcome to Crowns and Tiaras Podcast. I am Desire, your host, and that is Desire with a Z. Don't play with me. Now, tonight we have a special guest in the house. She happens to be a very, very beautiful Haitian princess. She's very intelligent. She has a great big heart, and she's also one of my greatest inspirations. And last but not least, she also happens to be my first cousin. So, ladies and gentlemen, let's put our hands together and welcome Marion LaCroix Esquire. Welcome.
Hi.
How are you?
I am good. I want to say I love what you're doing. I love this podcast. I can't wait to hear more episodes, but also I'm really appreciative that you invited me to join. So I'm happy to chat with you today.
I am really appreciative that you accepted. I know that you're a very, very busy woman. You are an attorney and it's a Sunday. So it's like really the only day that I could really get a hold of you. And I'm glad that you did take the time out to show me some love and some support.
Of course, anytime.
Thank you, thank you. So let's just get right into it. We got about 45 minutes. So let me just ask you, Queen, how you been rocking your tiara or your crown? Which do you prefer?
I'd say a crown. Why not?
Exactly, because you are a queen. Yes.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how you been rocking your crown in these last 6 months during this pandemic?
Yeah. So, you know, as you know, and your listeners might not know, I am an immigration attorney. So these last 6 months, I've still been working. I am also a business owner and I run my own immigration law practice, which is a job within itself, minus the legal work.
Wow.
I've been doing that. And then on top of that, I am an adjunct professor at Pace Law, where I teach legal methods to first-year law students. That's basically writing, case briefing, anything that they need to know about the first year of law school. And pretty much I'm there for them for that. And then I also coach for the bar exam, which has been crazy because...
Wow.
And then they were like, no, never mind. We're going to do it virtual in October. And so my students are sort of in a, you know, going crazy and I completely understand. Those are the things that have been keeping me busy these last six months, because although we're in a pandemic, all these things still have to go on.
Absolutely.
But yeah. But you know, I of course had some free time, you know, especially because, you know, things slowed down, you know, courts were closed and things were pretty slow beginning. And so I was trying to think about how I could, you know, with all this, with Black Lives Matter happening and all the police brutality, I'm thinking, what are other ways that the Black community does not get heard? You know, we know that police brutality is a big thing, but I think Black Lives Matter, how systemic racism affects us in other areas of our life.
Agreed.
So, yeah. And so I started the Black Legal Wellness Forum. Our first installment was in June, the end of June, and it went really well. I got together with five other attorneys. There was a real estate planning, law, trademark, copyright, and employment law, and of course myself, immigration. We were attorneys, and we just wanted to give information to the Black community about how racism affecting you in these areas of law, and how you can combat that. What is it that you need to do to build wealth in your community, to build wealth in your family, to protect the wealth in your family, or you know how to stay, you know. Are over-policed, whether they're Black American communities or Black immigrant communities. How do you protect yourself when the police is always after you? So we got some information out to the community at that time. And I want to continue to do this.
Right.
Coming up August 13th, and that one will be specifically immigration and how systemic racism affects, you know, the immigration process as well.
Right.
But I'm going to continue with these Black Legal Wellness Forums. I'm going to have something about voting. I'm going to have something about mental health. I mean, I want to continue with this. And that's basically how I've been keeping
busy. I think you should definitely continue with that. And like, that is so awesome. I just learned so many more things that I didn't know that you had going on. And I'm going to support that. I'm definitely going to tap in when you have your online meetings and that. So keep me posted. I'll definitely share on my social media as well, so that we all can stay abreast as to what's going on in our communities.
Absolutely. I will keep you posted.
Thank you. Thank you. So now, how has your career affected your family and your household, like your immediate family, you know, the family that you lived out there with around in New York? Mm-hmm. How has that affected your family in a good way?
Well, definitely, I think that part of being, you know, going to law school and then becoming an entrepreneur has motivated, or actually, I don't know, I believe my sister probably would have already had motivation, because that's the person she is.
Right.
But I feel like it definitely set a stage for her, and like, it set an expectation for her.
Yes.
And, you know, she knows that, you know, I mean, I think she's smarter than I am, to be completely honest. she's really smart. And right now she's in a biomedical program, like for a straight shot into medical school.
Yeah.
And I feel like she just has a really good head on her shoulders, but I think I'm hoping that I set the stage for her. And I think that definitely has helped her. And I think it has motivated my parents too. Like I see, you know, my mom before I did, but you know, she's thinking about more things to do, like speaking opportunities and, you know, things that she can use. She wants to be able to use her degree and her work as a mental health counselor to help the community too. So I think my work has really motivated them to be their best selves, and we motivate each other. My parents are my biggest motivators and my biggest cheerleaders. And I honestly would not be here if it weren't for them. I mean, I still live under their roof.
Amen. Yes. Well, you gotta do what you gotta do. And you know what? Let me just add that I see nothing wrong with your children living in the same household as you.
Mm.
Even when, because I feel like this, I feel like love is law. Yes, family is business. So when it comes to family, as we grow, and as we grow, you know, physically with more children, and as we grow financially, we should be expanding. We should get a bigger house so that now Miriam can have her own, you know, space in the house and her children. And we don't send our children outside of home to be taught or daycare. We do it within, you know, because once your parents retire, then they can be home with the children and teaching and doing the things you can't do to pick up the slack. And I think that's how Black people, not just Black people, I feel like all people should start that type of process, that mindset, you know, keep family together at home, keep our children raised and taught by us, you know, but that's just helped my whole perspective of it.
I 100% agree. I 100% agree. And I used to, you know, a lot of my friends don't have the, like, they're like, how do you, like, you get to run a business and not know when your next paycheck is coming.
Right.
And your parents are still allowing you to stay there, even if you don't contribute 1 month or you don't contribute at all. They don't have an issue with that. And my friends are like, that's not their circumstance. And that's not a lot of people's circumstance. I definitely acknowledge my privilege in having that circumstance. But I completely agree with you. I think that families should do that, because I think we can build wealth within our families if we're able to keep that money, you know, together.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yep. Yeah, one of my long-term goals is to build myself like a 21-bedroom mansion and just have all of my family, like all of my family who are productive, because every family has every family has those members that are not as productive, but those who are productive, those who have businesses or business ideas and just need some help executing, we need to all stay in the same quarters and build together.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love that idea.
Absolutely, yeah. Wow.
Love it.
Well, I just wanted to know, how long have you been an attorney? And also, is this your dream job?
So I have, so I've been an attorney. Well, I was admitted on August 15, 2015. So I've been an attorney for 5 years, but I started in law school, like started doing some legal work. I was like a student attorney in a legal clinic at law school. So I would say like, for at least 6 years, I've been like in it and practicing, but legally practicing for 5 years. And I would say my dream job has always been something where I was changing people's lives and teaching people.
Yes.
And I knew, like, very young that I'd be, like, I thought I'd be in human rights work. And so I considered going to grad school so I can get a human rights degree. Like, I wanted to do this fellowship in Haiti at one point where you work on, like, economic development and stuff like that. But I somehow, I was like, okay, with the changes that you want to make, how can you actually make that change? And I thought law school was the way to go. Like, I thought, you know, as an attorney, we change laws all the time by just fighting.
Yes. Small steps make big progress.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. So I was like, let me go to law school and figure out what this is. I'll figure out what area of law I want to be in. And also, as you know, my dad is a Haitian immigrant.
Yes.
And I've seen what he had gone through on his own to get through this process. So I was really interested in immigration. And then I started working in the immigration clinic in my law school and saw that I helped this family, these women, a mother and her two daughters, who were fleeing persecution in Senegal because they were going to be victims of female genital mutilation.
Mm.
And at that point, I was able to help them get asylum and then later their green card. And I was like, oh my God, this is human rights work. This is her right to her body. Mm. She's decided that she doesn't want to do, maybe other people in her village do it, but that's not what she wants to do.
Right.
And she should have the right not to do it. And that's when I realized immigration is where I want to be. Mm. And being a lawyer and doing immigration has been a stepping stone for me to do other things that are my dream, you know, to teach and just to change people's lives in different ways. I don't know that I'll always be practicing law,
right?
But I do know that this is a way for me to continue to help people in any way that I can.
Absolutely. Yeah. Wow. That is so, so awesome. So let me ask you, with mm-hmm. Uncle Lockwood being Haitian, did he teach mm-hmm. you how to speak French? Are you bilingual?
So not fully. So okay. I blame him for this all the time. I am not fluent in Creole or French.
Mm-hmm.
French I learned in high school and I was really good at it, but there was no one to practice with French. So I lost a lot of it. Creole, I learned at a young age, like many different terms, like I could understand it.
Right.
But it wasn't until I got older that I actually hired a tutor to teach me. And everyone's like, that is so stupid. You have a father that's totally fluent. Why did you pay someone to teach? And I'm like, you know what? Because he has no patience.
Right.
I learned when he taught me how to drive that he had no patience. And I was not going to try to just make him teach me Creole.
You get knocked upside your head every time.
Exactly. I don't want to deal with it. So I took a course and I have basic knowledge of Creole. I am no way fluent and I'm still working on that, but I wish I do, because like being bilingual is so important these days.
Oh yeah.
Oh, especially in the work that I do. I wish that I was bilingual, but I'm working on it.
Yes. I am too. I had downloaded this course to speak Swahili.
Nice.
Yeah. And I don't know why. I don't know why Swahili like just, you know, I don't know why I'm so infatuated with it, but I'm definitely learning. I'm in the process of learning. Yeah. So I'm going to learn Creole and French, and then we're going to have conversations. I'm going to be calling you like, hey, cuz. Yes. Yeah.
I would love that. Okay. We need to have like a conversation group where other people who want to learn Creole and French, we can get together for an hour, a month, or every other week. And just, you know, even if it's via Zoom, and just speak in that language.
I agree. We got to put that together. We got to definitely put that together. Like, put that together, like, within the next 30 days.
Okay. I have a paper right here. I'm writing it down.
Thank you. Thank you so much, cousin. So now, when it comes to the field of law, would you say that you find it better to work for yourself or to work for an already established law firm?
Hmm. You know, I feel like that depends on the person. Mm-hmm. For me personally, it was better for me to have my own, have my own law firm and to work for myself. And I'll talk about why, but it definitely depends on the person. Like if you want to work for someone else, you know, you might prefer to have a guaranteed paycheck every 2 weeks, you know, that's
right.
Good,
right.
You got
the stability of it. Right.
Exactly. you don't have to worry about anything other than your job, right? You have a specific role And if you just, if you do your role well, usually, you know, you're not replaceable at your job. Whereas, you know, entrepreneurship, you are responsible for how you eat. You eat what you kill. And so you have to be hungry. You have to be hungry. And you have to have that mindset, and you have to be a self-starter. You can't wait for someone to give you guidance and tell you what to do. It's like, you have to figure out what to do and execute. And you can't just talk about it. You can't just talk about it. You have to be about it. And people have to see that. And, you know, you have to be respected among your peers, like other colleagues like me. Other lawyers have to respect me, to refer people to me and trust me. And then my potential clients have to know, like, and trust me. And so it's a lot of work that goes into entrepreneurship. And I know you know this. I'm preaching to the choir to you, you know, and maybe not your audience, but for me, it's better to be an entrepreneur because all of this is in my blood, and it's in our blood. Our great grandmother was an entrepreneur. You know what I mean? Like,
I didn't know that. So, you know, and also with me, I'm always willing to learn new things. I never shut my mind. Even in the field that I'm in, you know, I'm always willing to learn and take classes and take lessons from those who have been doing it long before me. But I didn't know our great grandma was an entrepreneur.
My mom was telling me that. My mom was like, she was a babysitter. That's how she saved her money. She used to, like, back in the day with, like, prohibition and alcohol, she used to make her own alcohol and sell it in the South Carolina house. And my mom was like, well, that's how she was able to save her money. And she built a house. Like, she built her own house. And I was like, wow, like, that, it's in our blood. Like, we can't deny that this is something that we should be doing, whether or not everyone in our family is willing to or has the wherewithal to get through the process of entrepreneurship is another thing, but it's in our blood.
It's already in our blood. Now, when you said she built her house, she hired people to build it, or she built it?
She hired people to build it. She raised the money and had it. She had her house built, and she didn't buy a house or mortgage a house. Like, she paid cash and had someone build it.
That is so beautiful. Because I was asking because I had this whole thing where I went through this whole, I wouldn't say it was a phase. It was like an experience where I wanted to be in construction, and I became a bridge painter.
Wow.
And it was awesome. Like, the whole process, it was very, very militant, so much discipline. I ate healthy. I worked out every day. Wow. I was in the best shape of my life. But that's a whole nother podcast, girl.
It takes you going through all types of experiences to figure out where it is that you need to be.
Absolutely.
So I appreciate that.
Absolutely. Experience is the best teacher, no matter what you're doing. So let me ask you this. You seem so focused. Not that you seem, I know for a fact that you are a very focused, determined, you're just like all hands on deck with no matter what you decide to do. So how has that, or do you feel like that has limited you in, like, your early adulthood years, like when you want to, like, party or hang out? Did you, like, sacrifice some nights of going and hanging out or taking a trip with your girls and things like that?
Yes, I would say absolutely. And it's so funny because I thought about this the other day too, but, like, I went, like, straight from high school to college to law school. Then after law school, I had a 2-year fellowship. Like, I was in it, and I was just, like, I was like, I need, like, I wanted to, like, of course, in my mind, I'm like, by 30, I'm gonna build a house. I'm gonna have all these things. I had everything set up. But, you know, we all know that we are not the creator of a plan. But exactly. So we, like, you know, anything I wanted, if it wasn't for me, then I wasn't going to have it. Right. But yeah, I felt I. At the time, I never thought about it. I never thought, like, oh, I'm missing out. Like, all my friends are doing this and doing that. Right. Like, I was like, no, I got to pass this LSAT. Then I got to pass the bar exam. I was on a mission. Yeah. But now thinking back, I'm like, you know, I missed a lot of opportunities to make certain types of friends, to make certain types of mistakes in life that there are experiences that I don't know now. And I feel sort of, I feel sort of, like, sheltered in a way.
Yeah.
And then also, like, the dating thing, right? Like, I'm 31 now, and everyone in the family is like, all right, well, time's ticking. You know, what's going on with that? And it's like, well, I didn't have the opportunity to build upon that. And now I'm older and like I don't know where to go to meet people and all that, you know.
So let me just say this. I have friends. I have a friend who's been married to her husband. She's been with her husband, like she's been with him for 12 years, but they've only been married for like maybe 7. Mm-hmm. And she's a little older than me. She's mm-hmm. she's in her like late 40s, and she finally got pregnant. She finally got pregnant, and she's a business owner. She has a beauty salon out in the out in Harlem, right? Wow, she started off with a beauty salon in the Bronx, mm-hmm. and she finally got pregnant. And I really feel like personally, I love my children. I'm glad that I had my children when I did. But mm-hmm. if I had, you know, the world with all like you said, or if I had the parents that you have, and I was focused on a career, I probably wouldn't have had children until I was in my late 30s or 40s.
Yeah.
Because I feel like now you're financially established. Now you have all the experience. Now you know for a fact, like you don't want to find a babysitter just so you can go to a club and party.
Right.
Now is the time where you should be partying and traveling. And now they'll turn up. And I'm here for you because my children are big, girl. We could take a trip.
I would love that. I would love that.
Don't let anybody make you feel bad about that. You know, you tell them you're not on your time. You're on God's time.
Amen. Okay, that's the truth.
You ain't on your time. You on God's time. You can still have children. You can meet the love of your life when you're 45, 50 years old. You never know.
And what
about that Indian couple? They were like in their 60s before she finally got pregnant and had twins.
Oh my gosh!
You
really?
Gotta look that up. Yeah.
Oh my god. Okay. Yeah. I need to look that up.
For the longest, and they were like in their almost 60s before they got pregnant and had twins.
Wow.
So you know, don't rush yourself, and don't let anybody else rush you. Tell them that you're on God's time. You're not on your time. Okay.
Yes. My mom says that all the time. She's like, "You, when it's meant to be, it'll happen. Don't let it to anybody else."
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Wow, that is so awesome. So you know, I have so many questions for you.
No worries.
So I really wanted to know, what struggles did you find as a business owner? What were some of your struggles that you had to overcome? Or maybe there's still some of your struggles now, you know, to keep you focused and keep you, you know, on your grind.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I would say one struggle, and I think this probably relates to everyone, is imposter syndrome. And this is something that I...
Say that again. Repeat that again, cousin. I'm sorry.
Imposter syndrome.
Imposter syndrome. Mm.
Yeah. And so I felt like this, like in law school and when I was taking the bar, I always felt like, you know, like the first year of law school was really hard. Like after the first year, I was like, you know, I got this. But the first year it was really hard. I felt like I wasn't smart enough. Mm. I felt like I didn't deserve to be there because there were people in my class that to me were geniuses. I'm like, how in the world am I next to these people? Like, how did I get a question? Who let me in here?
Right.
So like in my mind, exactly. And so I was afraid to raise my hand in class. I was like just nervous about everything and I didn't feel smart enough or good enough. And then that like translated to when I took the bar exam. And I took the bar exam. I had to take it twice. I took it one time and didn't pass. And I studied, but it was the confidence factor that was missing because I honestly didn't believe that I could pass. Like this is the hardest exam. You know, people tell you that this is the hardest exam. This is like, you know, this many people don't pass, you know, Michelle Obama took it twice, like all these things you hear and you're like, wow, man, I can't pass, you know? So that followed me into business ownership. And I had to learn that, you know, I deserve to be here. Wherever God puts me, that means I'm meant to be there. Mm-hmm. And I shouldn't have the feeling of I'm not worthy or I'm not good enough or that people are going to realize that I don't know what they think I know, because it's not true. And you know, I think people in all disciplines and all fields, no matter what they're doing, should realize that if they're in a particular position, if you got promoted, if you are supposed to be there and you deserve to be there.
That's right.
And you are not an imposter. And I'm, you know, 5 years into practicing and 3 years into business ownership, and I'm finally learning that. So that was one big struggle that I've overcome, because it's just taken a lot of like mindset work and listening to a lot of books about, you know, positivity and affirmations and stuff like that. Another struggle that I've been through had to do with, I started my business originally with a business partner.
Okay.
So in 2016, we started our law firm together. We went to law school together, she and I. And I thought that we worked well together then. But it didn't work out because I didn't make sure that we had shared the same values, that we had the same work ethic. And you know, nothing against her. I think that she is very smart. And right. I think as an immigration attorney, she's extremely brilliant. Mm-hmm. But she wasn't willing to work as hard as I was. And that's how I felt.
Right.
And I felt, you know, in the beginning, I'm like, oh, I wasted 3 years with a business partner. I could be here if I didn't. But I'm taking that experience as a positive experience because she taught me a lot of things about business when I was her business partner. Like I learned a lot of do's and don'ts right. when I was in business with her. So I appreciate that.
Nice.
But she just wasn't the type of business partner that I needed. And I ended up doing pretty much all the work, especially towards the end, and I had to cut that off. Right. And that, of course, was like a divorce because we are like legally in a legal partnership for our business.
Right, right.
And so that caused a lot of like financial and, you know, personal and professional stress to get out of it and to fix it. And at this point, she's not even practicing law anymore. So whatever happened in our business, it falls on me.
Yeah, and her heart wasn't in it because she's not even in law anymore.
Nope, she's not. She's got a whole bunch of issues, which is why she's no longer practicing. But we just were not compatible. And what I would say to people who are thinking of going into business with someone else is like treat it as like a relationship. Like, are you compatible in all the areas before you sign and become partners? Because it is serious. It is serious, and it can make or break you. You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I guess that leads into like the next struggle, which is like financial struggle, being a business owner. Mm-hmm. You know, every month is different. You know, there's ups and downs. There are really good months, and then there are months where it's like zero, and you have to constantly be working. You have to constantly be, you know, trying out new things and looking at your numbers and figuring out what went wrong, and it gets tiring. And I think that's the biggest.
You got to know how to hold a dollar. You got to know your hands can't have holes in them.
Yeah, exactly. exactly. And so I think that right now I'm starting to get comfortable and like I'm in a much better place. But I think that that's an ongoing struggle, financial struggle when it comes to business ownership is, you know, like you said, learning how, once you get the money, learning what to do with it and not just spend it.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing that you are going to have good months, you're going to have bad months, you're going to have okay months. And I learned that you just need multiple hustles. Like,
that's
I learned from someone that it takes a millionaire has 7 streams of income.
Talk about it.
And when I heard that, like, it just like blew my mind. I'm just like, wait a minute. I'm over here trying to become a millionaire off of 1 stream of income.
Right.
That's not gonna happen,
right? You're not gonna become a millionaire off of a 9-to-5. And I'm not saying I'm not bashing anybody with a 9-to-5. I'm saying use your job to fund your dreams.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh my God, I love that. Use your job to fund your dreams. Absolutely.
Don't get, because you know, like some of us, we get our little jobs, and I'm guilty of it. Because when I was young, I didn't have shit. I didn't have much. So when I was young, I didn't have much. You know that. You know my story.
Yeah.
So when I finally learned how to get a job and work, I thought I was like, miss it. You couldn't tell me nothing. Yeah. I'm on my way to work. And even my friends were like, oh, let's go out. Girl, I got to go to work. work. You know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
No, you're not it. Like, you're going to stay an employee if you don't learn how to get a hustle, you know? So use your job to fund your dreams. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. That's so important. So important.
Very important. Well, I'm glad that you had spoke about do's and don'ts, because that was my next question for you. What would you say would be the biggest do's and don'ts for someone coming fresh out of college looking to become an attorney or to start their own law firm?
So if they're coming fresh out of college and they want to become an attorney, I think the first thing that I would say, learn what law school fits your goals before you apply to them. And the reason why I say that is because a lot of people, they just want to go to the biggest name law school. Right? Like they want to go to Harvard, they want to go to Yale, Princeton, whatever, big right. name law schools. And that's great too, because of course that works well if you want to work in corporate law. Like you want to work for a big law firm making, you know, very high six figures.
Right.
But also working 80 hours a week kind of thing, you know, especially yep. in the beginning. Like that works for sure. If that's what you want to do, you want to work at the Supreme Court, like you have really high goals, which all goals are high goals when it comes to this. But yep. if what I'm trying to say is that if you are trying to do something that requires an Ivy League education, then by all means, shoot for that star because you will likely reach it. However, if you're like me and you didn't go to law school because you wanted to, you didn't want to make millions of dollars off the backs of working people or other people, or
right.
even if, or you don't want to work for corporate law, or if you don't have the goal to work in the Supreme Court or be a Supreme Court justice or something like that, and you want to work, you know, for the underdogs, you want to do criminal defense or you want to do right. immigration, which all those things you can still make millions of dollars.
Absolutely.
But you know, if those were your goals, then I would say, you know, in the beginning it might be a little bit harder. So you don't want to have very expensive student loans. Mm-hmm. And a lot of us, you know, people of color, we take loans to go to school. Mm-hmm. There aren't very many options
for us.
Yeah.
You know what's crazy? I'm sorry to mm-hmm. interrupt you, but really no, quickly, I was always wondering why is it so easy to get a loan to go to school, but really hard to get a loan to start a business? Or to get a loan to buy a house.
Yeah.
But to go to school, you go sign up at the registrar's office, you hit financial aid, and boop, there you go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Crazy. But yeah. That's and a then whole we're other forever.
I know. We're forever entangled after that with the load. But yeah, I think that you need to figure out what school works for you. If you want to work in nonprofit, you know, you want to work for the American Civil Liberties Union, helping people get, you know, people who are wrongly convicted get off of death row, then think about one, how much does somebody like that make, right? If you're right. making $50,000 or $60,000 a year on that kind of job and you're not going too high, then you don't want to have to take loans that are very high. Mm-hmm. So you might want to look at excellent law schools, but are more affordable, like CUNY. CUNY Law is amazing. And I say to myself all the time, I wish I would have applied there and gone there mm-hmm. because it was cheaper than my law school. My law school wasn't Ivy League. I went to Pace Law School in White Plains, New York, but it was very yeah. expensive. It was a private law school. And right. so with the work that I do, you know, especially starting out, I'm not making a whole lot of money in the first year practicing right. an immigration lawyer if I'm going to be in a nonprofit. And that's part of the reason why I started my own practice is because I can be in control of what I make.
I love it.
But so that's one do is absolutely make sure. And then also the how the school feels, you know, if you want to mm-hmm. go to a school that's more diverse, make sure you look around and see if the school is diverse and things like that.
Right.
So I start off with law schools because that's just, that's the path you have to take in order to, you know, become a lawyer.
Right.
Yeah. And then for anyone, even if they don't want to be a lawyer, but they want to start their own business directly out of college after they've, you know, decided what it is that they want to do, I would say look for mentors. That's a big thing. Mm. Look for people that you can bounce ideas off of, or you can ask questions to. And that can be, you know, make, you know, not friends, but like get comfortable with your professors, you know, ask right. questions, reach out, meet with them in their office. I would say other graduates, people who graduated before you
right.
would be people who could be your mentors, or attend panels, like, you know, right. and reach out to those panelists after the panels and be in contact with them, because that's where you may find a mentor.
Absolutely.
And then definitely work in the field to know whether or not this is something that you want to do, or like what, like in law specifically, like there's so many different areas of law. Maybe figure out which, you know, work for different types of offices, law offices, to see which one interests you the most. These are a lot of things that you should do before going out on your own, you know, in starting your own business.
Right.
And I think the don'ts, and I think I just have probably one don't, is don't wait. I think a lot of us were waiting for the right time to do stuff. Right. You know, like, I just want to wait until I move here, or I have my family situation gets better here, or I think the time is going to pass regardless. And you should use your time wisely. Yes. So take, you know, the tests that you need to take to get into the programs you want to get into, or at least study for those tests. Do something to pass the time, productively.
Right.
But don't wait, because your situations don't often get better, you know, immediately, right. You know, and then you're waiting, you know. I look at my mom. Time. Yeah, I look at my mom, who started college in her 40s, you know,
right.
Because it was just never a good time, you know. Home situation wasn't great, and then she got married, and that, you know, and then she had kids, and then she could never find the right time, and then she just went and did it at 40. But you know, no time is too late, but it's definitely best not to wait.
Right. Right. Yeah. I agree. Yeah. Wow, that is awesome. So I know, you know, right now you haven't started building your family yet, and I know you do have your parents, and then also you have yourself, but I just want to know, like, overall, like, what is your why? What keeps Miriam going? What keeps you getting out of bed early in the morning and getting on your computer, getting on your phone, and getting to work every day in your firm?
Yeah. I guess I have probably two. One are my clients. They have the most amazing stories, many of which, like, I do immigration when it comes to helping people get their green cards, maybe through marriage or another family member. But I also do humanitarian immigration, which is my favorite type to do. And basically, humanitarian immigration is the type of immigration that's meant for people who are crime victims or fleeing persecution in their home country, or domestic violence victims.
Wow.
They're really for people who have had a really hard life. And the U.S. can offer a way to legal status because of that.
Wow.
And those are my favorite cases to take. And their stories and the things that they've gone through really, like, motivate me to get up and to, like, even if it's, like, because we all have bad days, and I definitely have bad days. It's like, I just want to lay in my bed today, and I have my own problems, and I don't feel like helping people with their problems.
Right. Absolutely.
But I think about, like, for example, I have a Jamaican client who is a domestic violence victim, and her husband, a U.S. citizen, has basically told her, you know, if you don't do this, I'm calling immigration, or I'm going to stop your green card paperwork. Like, he's holding it over her head.
Oh, God.
And she needed out of that situation.
Right.
And I needed to move quickly so that I can apply to get her work authorization, and so that she can be independent and be able to make decisions on her own and move out of that circumstance. So that really motivates me, because I'm like, you know, I'm actually going to change her life.
Yes.
When she's able to work legally, and when she's able to get out of a situation that's basically almost killing her.
Right.
And so it's that. And then the other side of that is, like, I want to have $1 million law firm. Like, that gets me up every morning. I'm just like, I want, like, I follow mentors who do have, like, 6-figure and 7-figure law firms.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, that's where I want to be. And so that's what, like, those two things, like, get me right up.
Well, let me share a little known fact. I also wanted to be a lawyer for a long time. I wanted to have my own law firm. I went to school at Westchester Community College for a little over a year. I became the Law Society president there. I was going to start out as a paralegal, but I wanted to get into corporate law at the time. And then Daz, your cousin Daz, he also has, he has a paralegal associate's degree.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. And I'm going to have him on the podcast probably you tomorrow. Should. Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
He has a paralegal associate's degree, and he wanted to be a lawyer as well. And then, you know, he got caught up in the system. So, yeah, he's going to be on. So I want you guys to tune in for that as well. But you got a lot of people around you. I think that I actually might. I still love public speaking. That is my passion. But I think I might still go forward with that, with the whole law thing, and still wrap that around the public speaking as well. know.
Yeah, absolutely. It's all in one. It is.
And you are so inspiring.
Doing it. Oh, thank you.
Yeah, you are really inspiring me. You really inspire me. I have learned some new things here in regards to immigration law and humanitarian mm-hmm. law. I didn't even know that was a thing, right?
Yeah.
So, I love you for that. You have a great, great big heart, Cuzzo. Like, you really do.
Aww.
And you know, and we're here on this podcast, and I hear you, and I'm listening to you, and you know, you're always helping people, and you're always, you know, you're always there for the cause. But I'm gonna need you to give me 3 things that you love the most about yourself. Let's not even talk about law. Let's not talk about the business. Let's not talk about the clients. Let's talk about you.
And you know, it's so hard for me to talk about me. You know, like whatever. If it's talk about the work that I do, talk about my clients' life, like I'm on it. And it's so hard for me to even like give someone a description about me or even what I like to do for fun. You know, but I definitely would say that I like about myself the fact that I have integrity. I mm-hmm. feel like my name means so much to me. Mm.
Talk about
my conscience. Yes. My conscience. I always want to look out for other people. I feel like in this world, one thing that we're missing is that we always should be number one, of course, but we don't think about how our actions affect other people. Mm-hmm. And so that's one thing that I think about often. My name is very important to me, and I want people to know that I'm honest, right. And I'm, you know, and that I mean well. I honestly mean well. Mm-hmm. All the time. Let's see. Another thing, the positive thing is that I'm determined. Mm-hmm. You know, I've had a failed business partnership. I've had failing the bar exam. I've had all these things that has happened to me. But I'm not going to give up, and I don't give up with anything. Like right now I'm on like a weight loss journey, and I'm like, I'm on it, and I've already lost some weight, but then I like fall back into old habits, and I'm like, mm-hmm. Oh God, but I'm determined. I'm determined to stick to it. Even if that means that sometimes I'm going to fall off, I'm going to continue because I know that it's important for me.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's something that you already said too, is that I have a big heart. I love all people. I love all things. I love animals and people. And, my one goal in this world would be like to leave some sort of lasting impression on people in terms of helping other people grow or teaching them or changing something that's going on in their life. So I would say those are positive things about me that I love.
Well, I would say that those are all things that are already embedded in your DNA.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean? We definitely are a family of, you know, integrity. We definitely mm-hmm. are a family of determination, and mm-hmm. we do have big hearts. Not everybody, like in every family, you know, but for the most part, the majority of us, you know, we do have big hearts, and most people who have big hearts don't always get the best of, you know, of other people's intentions, but we're always blessed in the end.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely. Right? Absolutely. Absolutely.
Always best in the end. So yeah, we're gonna definitely bring this podcast to a close. But before you go, I want to know, and I want to know, what is your favorite positive quote? But I think you can give me like 3, because I know you got some in you. I know you got. But the listeners, give us some positive quotes. If they're yours, if they're not yours, let us know who wrote them. And go ahead, shoot.
All right. So one that's up in my office is a Gandhi quote: "Be the change you want to see in the world." I think that's pretty self-explanatory. Yes. Mm-hmm. That's what I live my life by. Everyone should be leading by example. I think, of course, the late, great Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., injustice anywhere is injustice everywhere. for sure. I feel like those two stick out to me the most. And I'm like, where can I think about, I'm trying to think of another quote, because I listen to a bunch of books all the time,
right?
And I try to write those quotes down when I get when I hear them,
right? Right.
But I can't think of any right now, but for sure those are the two that are the top of my head and are the two that I always live by.
That is awesome. That is so awesome. I really appreciate you. I hope you all are listening. I hope you all are listening and getting those quotes. Get those in your system. That is some soul food for your soul, baby. Okay? And I wanted to point out, I noticed how you said, I listen to a lot of books. I listen to a lot of books. Like, this is 2020. We don't even read anymore. We just put on the Kindle. No.
Yes.
We just put the AirPods in, right? That is so awesome, like how the world is really changing.
Yeah. I fall asleep if I try to read a book. I'm so bad at it.
It really is like a sleep aid, right?
Yeah, it is. It is. It's probably those 3 years of reading in law school. I'm like over it. I don't want to read anything else.
I know. I'll
listen. Mm-hmm.
Well, cuz, we're going to bring this podcast to a close, but before we go, I need you to leave your contact information for those that are looking for an immigration attorney. Leave your social media and all that good stuff. Shoot.
Sure. So my Instagram is LaCroix Immigration Law, and I'll spell it. It's LaCroix, as in X-ray, Immigration Law. That's my Instagram. You can find me on Facebook at LaCroix Law PC, LaCroix Law PC. And if you're looking to meet with me for some reason in terms of immigration or the bar exam or anything related to the things I talked about today, you can definitely give me a call. My number is 914-368-3550. That's my office number. You'll be greeted by a receptionist and you can leave a message and I'll return your call as soon as I can.
That is superb. I appreciate you. All those who are listening in. Go and follow Miriam on Instagram at LaCroix Immigration Law. ASAP. And Miriam, please do me the honors and close us out.
Of course. Thank you for listening to Crowns and Tiaras podcast. And go follow Desire on Twitter and Instagram at I Am Desire. That's Desire with a Z. Don't play with her. Peace.